The views expressed on this podcast are only those of the individuals featured on the show and do not in any way reflect the official policy of the United States government.
You are listening to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. We believe wealth isn't just about finances and money. It includes health, relationships, and anything else that makes you excited to get up in the morning. We interview members of the foreign affairs community to see how they're building wealth, both personally and financially, no matter where they're posted. This is your host, Tanya Salsa. Let's get to today's show. Welcome to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. And today I'm very excited to have joining us Tim Tranchilla. And Tim has a very interesting story and one that we haven't heard on the podcast yet, which is how to write a travel guide while you're working full-time in the Foreign Service. Tim's been in the Foreign Service for 12 years, has some amazing tours, including Mexico, India, Egypt, South Africa, New Zealand, but he actually published a book on the Holy Land, which is called The Bucket Guide to the Holy Land, a DIY travel planner to create a bucket list filled dream trip to Israel, Jordan, Palestine, and the Egyptian Sinai. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you, Tanya. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes. And it's very funny for our listeners. So Tim and I were riding around in the car and he's like, oh yeah, I listened to the podcast and you know, my book's coming out. And I'm thinking, oh, wow. And I said, you should be on the podcast. He's like, no, it's just, you know, just got published. He was so modest about it. And let me tell you, because I have the book here in my hands. This book is amazing. I mean, it is 800 plus pages, incredible amount of detail. I mean, this is a treat. And I have to ask the question, Tim, how did this start? I mean, a lot of us joined the Foreign Service and we're like, we love travel. And wouldn't it be cool? Because maybe all of us have secretly harbored this idea of being a travel writer, right? Before we joined the Foreign Service. And you know, the Foreign Service is better paid probably, but very few of us actually do it. So how did this come about?
So there's the long story and then the longer story, Tanya.
Oh,
and
we got time.
I'll start with my history as a writer, I suppose. So before the Foreign Service, I was in a grad program in New York for creative nonfiction. I've always had an interest in writing. I've done lots of different types of nonfiction writing over the years. And I graduated thinking there's no way I can be a professional writer living in New York City, which is where I went to grad school. I simply must have a real job. I visited a friend who was in the Foreign Service serving in Lima and thought, oh, this works. I could do that.
Nice.
And then maybe this would give me some time in order to develop new writing projects that I wanted to work on. And quickly realized I did get into the Foreign Service, started immediately, and most of my previous projects were sort of, they languished in the back burner while I had to come to terms with being a full-time employee of the Department of State, right? So it took a few years. It took maybe 5 years before I felt like I was ready to start a real project. And I went on home leave, and my spouse and I, we were traveling through the United States on a road trip to see national parks. And I felt like, and we were gone for 30 days, did this great 10,000 mile road trip, felt like we made really great efforts at pulling together a definitive best hits bucket list guide to road tripping through the United States. Mm-hmm. So my next tour was Tel Aviv. We went to Tel Aviv. I started sort of the beginnings of what I thought would be a guidebook for road tripping in the United States. Quickly realized that I didn't visit enough of the national parks in order to really provide enough perspective on that particular guidebook. However, I really liked the idea of writing a guidebook. And I've saved tons of guidebooks over the years. I have everything. There's my bookshelves are filled with guidebooks. And I've always thought that there's a way to create a new guidebook that would benefit a traveler who likes planning.
Hmm.
For me, I get very frustrated with most guidebooks, the Lonely Planets, the Rough Guides, the general guidebooks that everybody's familiar with, because they tend to be mostly just encyclopedias. You open the guidebook and it's all region-based fact, information that is sorted by country, then by region, then by state, then by city, and then each one has the exact same sort of format. But if you have no idea what you want to visit, then there's no reason why you would go to the back of the book or the middle of the book, right? Like you're going to look up Barcelona.
Taking a few pages, yeah.
Yeah, or you're going to look up Jerusalem in this case because you've heard of it. But why would you find yourself in the northern part of Israel or the southern part of Jordan if you didn't know that what those places have to offer? Mm-hmm. So I thought this would be a great opportunity for me to design my own guidebook. And I created sort of a template for what I thought a new guidebook could look like. And it quickly became apparent that I needed to create a prototype, not just the template. I thought of this whole thing as a series right away, and I didn't have time to write all the books. So I thought I'll just start with one. And I was living in Tel Aviv at the time. And so I started writing what turned into a guide to the Holy Land. And I didn't limit it just to Israel because I thought you wouldn't go all the way to Jerusalem, for instance, and then not pop over to Petra. That seems silly. And so it ended up expanding to include the four territories. And it took me 8 years to write. And ooh, I've only just released it. I've been on 3 tours since.
So oh my goodness.
It really was a long process for putting it together. I lived in Tel Aviv from 2014 to 2017, and then the book was released in 2022. So it ended up taking quite a long time to actually come to fruition. But here we are 8 years later.
Well, congratulations, because honestly, that is a lot of persistence and hanging in there on a project. I mean, I personally know that, you know, during my time in the Foreign Service, I was like, oh, I think I'll try X thing, whatever X thing was, only to promptly abandon it at the next post, or, you know, I always wanted to try this or write that. And then it just never kind of gets out of the box. So how'd you hang in there over those 8 years? Like, what kept you going? Cause I mean, you do have a full-time job, right? And it's not a slouchy job, let's just say. I mean, it's sure. pretty demanding, and you've got to do a lot of stuff. So how'd you find time on the sites? Did you, you know, spend weekends? Did you just write here and there? What was sort of your process of like keeping the interest and the momentum alive for 8 years?
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of fits and starts, and I really am my own worst enemy. I recreated the concept over and over and over again. So I just kept refining what I thought was already a good idea and would have to start from the beginning again in order to make changes throughout the whole book. And, you know, you've already mentioned it. It's a thick tome. It's 900 pages. I mean, it's very dense, lots of words. And so every time that I would make some substantial change, which was all the time, I'd have to start over. So there were plenty of times when I wanted to quit and thought to myself, you know, I am, to answer your question, I'm losing many nights and most of my weekends to this guidebook. And not losing, because if I actually thought that I wasn't enjoying it, I would have quit. I would have stopped. Yeah. Yeah. But I hung on because I really believed in the concept and the idea. And in my head, it was, yes, it was about writing a book. And I do like writing. So I felt like that was a component of it. But it quickly became more than that, where it was a lot of research. You know, it ended up being a lot of travel. Poor Nestor, my spouse, and I, we ended up having to plan, poor us, right? We had to plan most of our weekends doing the actual itineraries that I had outlined in the book. And so I would spend the majority of the week doing all the research, and then we'd have to go and collect the information about opening hours.
Oh, sounds terrible, Tim. Oh, sounds awful.
Miserable.
Horrible job.
Please. Yeah. Please pity me.
I'm just teasing.
So it was fun. It was good. It was, but it was a lot of work, you know,
it's like at the end of the day. Yeah. It's not like we're here to be like, la, 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 let's look at that. It's like taking notes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did my second job. I did just as much. I put in just as much time as I put in my day job, and a lot more energy, right? Because you come home and you're exhausted. And then I would spend 2 to 3 hours every evening working on this book. I would spend at least one entire day, 8 to 12 hours on the weekend working on this book. It just was, and year after year after year. And I never thought it was going to take so long. So I think if you had told me 8 years ago that it was going to be an 8 year long project, no thanks. I'd rather just travel. But this was just I really thought I'm so close to the finish line. I'm like 80% done. I'm 80% done. And I kept just saying I'm 80% done.
So persistence. Yeah.
You had to keep pushing through. Yeah. It was a marathon, not a sprint.
And I think something that you said really struck me, which I think is really important because a lot of people have big dreams, right? About either writing a book or, you know, doing some kind of big trip and you have to actually enjoy the process and the day-to-day sort of grind, if you will, of getting to that goal. It can't just be about the goal. And as you mentioned, you said, I enjoyed writing it. I liked doing it. And that was why I was able to hang in there for 8 years. Yeah. Because I think a lot of people, they just look at the end destination. They're like, I want that. But they don't want everything else that comes with it, right? Which was the nights and weekends and long nights and the revisions and, you know, this perfecting and like refining and getting to the point where you felt like this is really something I'm proud of. But, and again, you had that big vision of, I believe in this project. I see where it can be, what it can be, and it's missing out there. So I'm going to create it. So amazing. Love it.
Thank you. Yeah, it did. It required a lot of internal pressure. I cannot lie. It was motivated solely by my own desire to see this project through to completion, because that is one thing that you learn, I guess many people do, when you're trying to start a business. And I now think of this as a business, even though it's just a book.
Sure.
And there's, you know, I don't have a bank account for the bucket travel guide. You know, it's not that sophisticated. It's just a book at this point.
Yet.
We'll see. But I do think of it as a business. And I often thought to myself, you know, most entrepreneurs are in it for themselves in order to see through this project, right? There's nobody who is going to hold your hand and give you the gold platter that allows you just to walk to the bank and get your loan and walk to the clients and say, here you go, do you want this? And they all say yes, and then give you money. I mean, it just doesn't work like that. As easy as it would have been to just say, okay, here's a book and I'll just post it on Amazon myself, I knew that that was not going to reap rewards in the end. Would I have been gratified at having just completed the book? Yes. But honestly, it's, you know, I need something to do once I retire, Tanya. So, you know, this is, bucket guys needs to expand. It needs to keep going.
It's a retirement plan. It's an excellent retirement plan. So talk to us about some of the challenges of publishing a travel book. Like how, you know, you mentioned there are some, you know, big names out there and they do kind of have a similar format, right? And it's probably because that's usually what people want. And so your book is breaking the mold, I think, in a lot of different ways. And so how did you get a publisher? What was that process like? And then what was the actual sort of process of, I'm going to send you a manuscript? Did they send stuff back? Did they have revisions? Do they fact check? Like, how does that all work?
Yeah. So I learned all of this while doing. You'd think that somehow there would be a user manual on how to publish
a travel book.
And certainly to publish a book, that's true. To publish a travel book is a slightly different animal. And publishing nonfiction is also different from just publishing fiction.
So
nonfiction, and I did try this with this book, most of the time, authors who have a project idea will submit that project through their agent or their publisher before they write the book. They come up with what is normally around a 50-page proposal. And in that proposal, you outline why you're the right person to write this book, who the audience could be, what your marketing strategy is, do you have a social media background, who is going to buy this book, and then what is the longevity of the project. So then agents and publishers will buy into the idea, give you an advance, and then you write the book. So that's where I started from. And I tried to market this book when guidebooks around the world are dying. I mean, you know, it's like, it's a hard copy book and most people want everything on the internet, right? Like if you're making a travel plan, you're getting your hotel stuff from the internet, you're getting your activities from TripAdvisor, whatever your favorite source is, or you're reading a million blogs and you're trying to piece together your trip. So my idea was I want the benefit of the internet, but in a book format. So I got rid of a lot. My push to these publishers was the guidebook industry needs to change. Here's a way to do it. I got rid of, for instance, hotel and restaurant recommendations.
Nice. 99%.
Nobody needs those, right? Like everybody does that research online, except if they're what I call experiences. And if they're experiences, then they make it into the book as a special thing that you should set up if this sounds like something that's interesting to you. So anyway, the publisher, I sent this to, I don't know, several dozen publishing houses and received very, very little feedback. I hired a proposal doctor to see, is there any way that I can get this into good people's hands? And her reply was, this sounds like it will never sell. No offense. You should probably which was okay because it was honest. And at that point I needed some honesty, right? Like
I'm working,
I'm independent. And so it's like, I just need some hard facts that if I can't just send it to another 100 publishers, like I need to know what is going wrong here.
Exactly.
And publishing houses are just not in the business of buying guidebooks. They don't sell well and they don't have good longevity, right? Like they expire after a year because of the hotel and the restaurant recommendation. So then they need constant upkeep. So the Lonely Planets and the Rough Guides, they're independent publishing houses. They publish their own books. They have their own system in place so that every year they're making new money on the new titles, but they don't sell anything else. So it was very difficult for me to find a market in that sense. So they recommended do a Kickstarter or up your social media game and get on Twitter and
funded campaign, in other words,
Instagram and do this all yourself. I'm not a website designer. I don't know how to do all that stuff. And so, you know, that was extremely intimidating. I'm a book writer. I don't, you know, it's like, can somebody else please do that for me? So I went on sites like Fiverr and Upwork and was trying to find contractors who would be able to do these independent pieces for me. Like the book wasn't even a book yet. I needed somebody to do the cover. I needed somebody to do the photographs and somebody to do the book design. And it was so many elements that I needed cartographers, right, in order to make the map. So I needed somebody who could design the thing. It was it was a lot of independent pieces. And most of these things are not easy to find.
No.
Right, online, let alone ever, anywhere. So the good fortune that I had was I took a break. I went to Auckland. I was getting settled in Auckland. That was my last post. And once the pandemic happened, I found myself after the initial surge of all work that we all had, and then we figured out how to stay at home. I had some free time on my hand and I really wanted to finish the book. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to push through and I'm just going to complete the book. The travel industry, of course, was one of the most, you know, depleted of all industries.
Most impacted, sure.
Yeah, most impacted. And so they weren't sending people out into the field to write new travel books. And most of them were considering that they were going to go under. One of them, Journey Books, which is the parent company of Brat Travel Guides, who are sort of like a mid-level travel guide company. They do lots of Africa and Central Asia. They're very famous as being sort of like the one good book in remote parts of the world.
Nice.
So they have, so they have lots of really good books out there. They opened their doors to independent authors in order to provide the services that I needed in one package. And so they have book designers, they had editors and publishers, and they had the print team that could get the book printed and sent from India to the UK where they were based. They had the cartographer and they had
the whole package.
And one person in particular was the overall coordinator of my book. And the process, anyway, I submitted the book to them. They said, sure, we'll take you on, but not under our name. You can be under your own name. So essentially, I am just independently published under using their services. So I basically bought into their service package, and now I am independent from them now that the book is out into the world.
Interesting. And so in a way, COVID was kind of a door opener. Because do you think that they would have done it otherwise, maybe?
Right. No. I mean, I can't imagine that that was in their best interest to promote and work, you know, use their staff to work on a competitor's guidebook.
Right. Yeah. It's a little kind of mind bending. You're like, huh.
Yeah.
But COVID kind of upended everything. And so, hey, brave new world. Why not?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And so it's great because, I mean, I have a finished, lovely, beautiful book in my hands right now. So, I mean, and this is probably jumping ahead a little bit, but because it is a series, is
hopefully a series.
no, I'm going to say is because I would like to see more of them. Can I pick the country next? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh yeah. What are you? I had to hire a website designer. So I do have a website, and on the website, it actually asks, where would you like the next Bucket Travel Guide to be? So Tanya, please tell me, what would you like to be the next the next series book.
I'm a little biased, but you know, my first tour was in West Africa. I just love Africa, and I feel like there could be better books out there. But that's you know, and maybe Brat already has something. But I want to say that I'm going to support Bucket. But I would just like to see, because I think the idea and the concept is really interesting, because you're right. Like, the internet has changed a lot of things, including restaurants and hotels, right? Because things like that open and close all the time, and it's hard to keep up with that. But what you have in your book, which is really interesting, is sort of rating things based on experience. Like, what kind of experience do you want, right? Mm-hmm. When you go out and travel, do you want something historic? Do you want something, I don't know, you know, a little more active, or, you know, what is it? What is it that appeals to you? And then you can kind of, and you kind of rank places, right? Yeah. Like, according to, you know, it's really high on this, but it's lower on this, which I think is a really interesting way of kind of looking at places, because that isn't how, I mean, obviously a lot of us have grown up with the travel guides that you have mentioned. They're just like, oh, here's a place and here's a restaurant. And you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you're like, oh, well, there's this market here and it's really great on this aspect, but maybe it doesn't quite hit this aspect. And, you know, maybe you feel like when you get up one day that you want to try something, you know, historic versus, I don't know, whatever it is. But I think that there's always room for new and interesting concepts. And I know, and maybe I'm old fashioned, but I actually like a book when I travel. I don't want to just use my phone. And half the time, I mean, sometimes service is not good a lot of places.
Yeah.
So you can make an argument for a book, right? And books last. And, you know, sometimes I don't want to stare at my screen. I'd rather have pages, you know.
Well, and I think the it's sort of the beauty of having a hard copy book is that it ends up becoming more of a choose your own adventure style book, right? Nice. Like, turn to page 94, turn to page 63. And that is really hard to do with an electronic book. Mm-hmm. Any of the eBooks that you have, I mean, like, try moving to exactly the page that you need. Sure, you can have links and you can sort of, but you can only open things one at a time, right? Like, there's the tactile sensation of putting your finger on page 30 while you like flip over to page 96, right? Like, that is something that I really felt was essential. And while many people were trying to say, you're going to make more money if you do this as an ebook rather than a hard copy book, the reality is that I don't think that travel guides work unless they're physical. It's just like, it's too, otherwise you just, it's just the internet. Then you may as well just be on the internet. So, even though this is a monster, and it's heavy, it's still, to me, it's very important to have it physically present in order to be able to, get the most out of it.
I'm totally with you on having a paper book. I'm old school. I love the feel of books. So I totally get where you're going with it. I have a question. So, you know, you find this publisher, it sort of magically worked out with COVID that they had space to take on independent people. What does it actually cost to do this kind of project? I mean, you mentioned initially that, like, you know, you had sent out all of these inquiries and normally like a publisher will give you an advance. Like, what does that look like? Normally, I mean, they're like, here's, I don't know, $5,000 or like, how does it work? Is that like a percentage of what they think the book is going to sell? And it sounds like that's not what happened in your case. So it was sort of like a semi hybrid self-publishing, but through a publishing house kind of deal.
Right.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about how that works and sort of the nuts and bolts and kind of the economics of actually publishing a travel book.
Yeah. So how you framed it is correct. Oftentimes the publishing house will look to see what they expect sales to be, and then the advance will have some sort of correlation to that, right? Lots of authors get $10,000 advances, maybe $15,000 advances. And if you look at full-time authors and what many of them who are sort of middling in their professions are getting, I mean, they're making, you know, less than $30,000 a year. So it's not a highly profitable enterprise. When we're talking about the Stephen Kings of the world, then of course you're in the millions of dollars. And so that is not what we're talking about when we're talking about travel guides. And also the thing with travel guides too, is there's normally not one author, it's a team. So the other types of, you know, the other books out there, it's an enterprise that has a team of people, all of whom are profiting and benefiting. Most of the writing is contracted out. So, you know, the folks who are doing the data collection and are out in the field who are writing the books every year are on loan for 2 months or something. So they're not actually, they're getting paid rather than getting a book advance. So getting a book advance was really a stretch, I think, for this particular situation.
Genre. So
that, yeah, for this genre. So that's that kind of was just me hope, you know, thinking positively. Oh, well.
Which you have to do with any big project, right? You're like, I believe in it. It's going to work. Well, I think that's the first step.
Right. And of course, you know, any person is going to say, I want to do it the easy way first. And then if that doesn't work, then I'm going to go the hard route. Like, who starts at the hard route? So anyway, I tried. And so what happened was this publisher, they had offered their services as a business themselves. And so there's an interesting article out there in the world about how much it actually costs to be an independent author. Mm. And it's not what you think, because there, while I bought into a package, no matter what, if I had stayed 100% independent, I was going to have to spend money.
Still incur costs.
Yep. Incur costs in order to make this book a reality. First, you have to find somebody who knows how to put a book together. You can't just use a Word document and then submit that to the...
No.
Right? Like, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, the editing, a book has to look beautiful.
Yeah, it has to look beautiful.
It has to be pretty. There's all kinds of formatting that, like, a professional, like, formatting type of person does. Right. Yeah.
And the book that I created looks like a guidebook. So,
yes.
You know, it does. I had the benefit of having a publishing house that was a guidebook, you know, publishing house. So that's really nice. For the folks out there who are writing books that maybe they're memoir, right? And it doesn't actually have photos. Even still, you have to pay for the font. You have to pay for the cover photo.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You have to pay somebody to do the formatting. You often have to pay to print the books, which nobody thinks about. I certainly wasn't thinking that I was going to pay to print books and then I was going to have to store them. So the house that I'm using actually offers a storage service. Had I not done that, the 3,000 books that I would have needed to get printed would all be in my basement, and I would be sending them through the post office every weekend.
Yes.
To ship off these books, which is not that's not realistic, especially when we're on the road all the time,
right.
Moving around the world. So the actual cost that I put in, the cost that an independent author would put into a book is anywhere between $10,000 and $20,000 of their own money.
Wow. Interesting.
In hopes that you sell X thousand number of copies, you make $10 or whatever it is on each book. But if you're a new author, and then so you do the math and hopefully you make a profit. But if you're a new author, and especially if you're doing an electronic version of a book and you're selling it for $199, then you're getting no profits. You don't make any money. So Amazon, which is where I'm sort of selling exclusively, because that's you have to start small. I can't distribute everywhere and give everybody two books. So we decided to send all the books to Amazon. Amazon and all United States publishers take 55% of the cost of the book, and they discount it as the wholesaler's discount. So they automatically, my book is $28. The book that they paid for was $12. So automatically, I'm not going to get more than $12. Well, the cost to print the book is $6 approximately, and I pay for the publisher. Yeah, I pay the publisher in order to print more copies of this book. That's $6. The publisher gets a little bit of the profits of that, and then I get the pittance that remains, which in some cases, especially if I print smaller quantities of the book, the cost of the per book goes up and I actually lose money. So many independent authors will in fact lose money on their first ventures. And so part of my strategy with this was, it is a series. I need to get the business out there. I need to get the name out there. Bucket Guide to the Holy Land. Bucket Guide to the Holy Land. Everybody, all those readers. So
it's catchy. It's like bucket list. That's what
bucket
it is.
List. Like bucket
it makes
list.
Sense. Yeah.
So I was using this as business startup costs. And so I paid this company to provide me with a wonderful cartographer. I mean, we spent hours and hours and hours. Every single map was hand-drawn. Which was incredible. Somebody had to align all the photographs, right? Make those perfect. And my spouse, Nestor, did all of the photographs from the cover to the insides. He did a lot of the sketching of the site maps, which is great. There are so many elements of this particular book, which this one company was able to provide. And so I felt like it was a good investment to be able to use them. So I think it ended up costing something like £20,000, British pounds, because it's a UK company. And at the end of the day, if I sell 4,000 to 5,000 copies of this book, then I will more or less break even. Maybe I'll make a little bit in the end. And the average travel guide usually sells something like 4,000 to 5,000 copies, unless you're Lonely Planet, and then you sell maybe 15,000 copies, but they're an outlier. So we'll see. It normally also takes a year for the book to maximize its profit because, for instance, my book came out in September and nobody is traveling in September. So not the greatest time to release a book, but it does allow me to get the name out so people can think about it. And then maybe by March, when they're starting to plan for the following summer, then it will be in their heads like, oh, now's the time I have to go buy that guidebook. So
there are planners over the winter, I feel
there
like.
There are. I'm one of them.
Yes, there are planners.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think they'll appreciate this book because all the detail and organization that's in here. I mean, this is like the planner's dream guide to the Holy Land, really.
It is. It's also, and you know, a lot of people have said to me when I'm explaining the concept, this sounds complicated. And I thought like the whole idea that you had was to simplify the process and make it easier to be able to plan a book. And so it is. There's a whole DIY element to it. And that is how you get the most out of the book, is by actually using the different components of the book. There's a whole section called the DIY Itinerator, and that allows you to create an itinerary using the multi-step process. However, there's also just grab-and-go elements to the book. There's walks and drives that are for every single micro region. So 75 different walking tours and driving tours through covering the entire Holy Land. There are over 100 prefabricated itineraries at the back of the book. So if you're super lazy, and that's totally okay because you might just want to go on vacation. I like to plan trips, but a lot of people like to go on vacation, which I think are two separate things.
They are.
So the itineraries at the back are just plug and play. You pick the things you want to do. If you have 3 days, then you go to the 3-day chapter. If you are just going to Jordan and you want the best hits, then it says you should go for 6 days. You go, you know, you plan your trip for 6 days. So it caters to lots of different types of travelers and lots of different desires and activities that people want to do.
I like the choose your own adventure because I think that hits the nail on the head, because there's even a section in here because, you know, for people that are a little less organized, like myself, there's, you know, what do you do 12 to 6 months before, or 6 to 3 months, or the things that you need to do. And it is all spelled out, like what you need to do here. He talks about the holidays, of when to plan the trip and all of that. I mean, this is like, he's thought of everything so that you don't have to, you know, you just dive in and out. And like you said, take what you need, which is great.
Right. And for those who are more interested in planning, the book was meant, I've always felt like I didn't know where to begin with a regular guidebook. And I wanted a guidebook that was like an Apple product. It didn't require any effort to be able to use it. And if you're thinking about a book, well, how do you use a book? Well, you start at the beginning and you work your way to the end. And so I wanted to create a book where you just start at the beginning and then you work your way forward, which is not how guidebooks normally operate, but that's how this one operates. So even with that, like you're talking about, I thought, well, where do you start? And you start with thinking about the trip and when do I want to plan it? Don't, you know, most of us think, well, I'll buy my airfare and then I'll figure it out 2 minutes before I get on the plane, right? Like, where's my hotel?
That's a little stressful, I think. That's stressful. I mean, especially if you're traveling with like more than, I mean, it's one thing if you're, you know, I don't know, 24 and hitchhiking across the place. Cause I mean, I just, you know, flew by the seat of my pants, but you know, when you're older, you have a family or you have pets. I mean, you got to plan these things. Yeah. This is not, I show up and then we just figure out what to do, because honestly, this might be your 5 days that you get for the next 6 months to go on vacation. You want to make sure that your 5 days are awesome. And the only way that happens is by planning.
Right. Especially if you're planning to go in August, which is when everyone else in the world, especially Europe, is also planning on going to the Holy Land. So, you know, if it definitely benefits to follow the rubric and do the 12 to 6 months, make sure that you have your lodging sorted and make sure that you're, you know, that you're starting to think through, are you going to need a car and what activities are you going to plan? You know,
I love it because I feel like there's essence of the Foreign Service in this book.
Inevitably.
Yes, I'm like, this is so organized, and it's like it's all there, you know. It's kind of like a nice little BCL, if you will. Like, oh, and I gotta do this and this and this and this. Oh, right. Good and it's checklist. All there. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. So you get to the end of this 8-year journey. You have like birthed this baby into the world, this travel book. Because I mean, 8 years is a long time to be working on any kind of project, even if you like it, right?
Yes.
What did it feel like at the end when you like held the book, like the physical book in your hands?
Yeah. Well, it was, I won't say anticlimactic because it wasn't. It was very nice to physically touch the book. But like we've talked about this, I have planned for the release of this book at the absolute worst moment that it could possibly happen, where I'm trying to, you know, I was buying a house at the same time and I was moving back from overseas at the same time. And I started a new job that I really love. That's also like involves a lot of travel. And so I don't have a lot of spare time. So this particular book, which post-print requires an enormous amount of work because I have to now create a social media presence, which I've never had before. So it was a little stressful when I saw it, because I was like, it's gorgeous. I love it. Now, how do I sell it? You know?
Yes. Yes.
And that has been a real challenge because I wanted to do it the easy way. Like everybody wants to do it the easy way. And I wanted it to sell itself, right? I want people to just hear about it and think that is the most amazing guidebook idea I've ever heard. I will take 3 or whatever. And then it's just, you know, it blows up, it's viral, and it doesn't work like that. You know,
most things don't. You gotta get the word out and you gotta get the word out multiple times, because sometimes the first time people hear it, they're kind of
right.
because people are so busy and there's so many things competing for our attention these days that it's repetition and it's right. Like, and then people are like, oh yeah, I think I've heard about that. Oh yeah. And then it starts to travel and it starts to get momentum, but it takes a long time.
Yeah.
It does.
And this is how the ad platforms on Facebook and Amazon work, which is also part of the marketing strategy, is you pay for ads. Mm-hmm. People who you don't know need to buy into this concept, right? Like I will probably sell out from the first run, which is just 500 copies right now, which is very good. But that's because I've asked every person I've ever met in the world to please buy a copy. And at that point, then, you know, eventually I will sell out of the 500, but it will not have a life of its own unless people who I don't know are also interested in it.
Are also talking about it.
Right. Yep. Write reviews and tell their friends. And then it becomes sort of this, a momentum builds, which is, you know, I have to be patient, but also actually requires work. It will not happen unless I am out there writing things, you know, creating content, that awful word, and, you know, building a network of people who are interested in this idea. So
Are you doing these kind of like digital media ads currently?
Yes.
How has that been going?
It's not easy. Part of it is because just exactly what you said, the average person needs to see an ad something like 7 or 8 or 9 or 12
times
before they will actually click. And for Facebook and Amazon work differently. Facebook, if you submit an ad, honestly, I had to hire a marketing team because I don't have time
to do
it.
I get confused too. I mean, I should do more, but I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. I follow through and I do the downloads, you know, every couple of weeks we have an hour long conversation and I leave and I'm like, yes, I understand everything. And then I'm like, I don't understand.
You completely forget after. Yes. I'm the same. I'm like SEO.
SEO. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's on Facebook, the impression alone, just showing the thing costs money. But on Amazon, you don't actually have to pay unless somebody clicks on the link. But they don't even see the sponsored ad unless you've bid high enough. And so I could bid as high as $2 to $3 per book in order to compete with Lonely Planet, who pays for all the money.
Ouch.
And that's out of pocket. So $3 just for somebody to click on the link, and then there's no guarantee that they're going to buy it. So
that seems like too much.
It's hard. Yeah. So a lot of people lose faith in Amazon ads for that, but that's exactly where I need people to go right now in order to build up the sales. So it's complicated. I don't have a good answer. That part's tough.
Do they do such things as like meet the author in bookstores? I mean, there are not many bookstores as there were before. And I mean, I try so hard to support the bookstores that are around because I still love them and I don't want them to go anywhere. But do they do that? Because like that is one cool thing about having a physical bookstore, is like to go in and do like a talk about your book and like meet the author and like those kinds of things. Do they even do that anymore? Like, is that part of a marketing plan for an author?
You know, they do. And because if I had been based in the UK, I think the publishing house would have helped me set up those types of things. I think in the UK, that's a little bit more that's more their speed. I do think that that still happens in the US, but because of the book market and, you know, the death of Borders and Barnes and Noble, where a lot of people would go and just browse and look at travel guides. I mean, that's where I would go to always get a travel guide, open all the travel guides, and I would spend 2 hours in Barnes and Noble just sitting there reading and seeing, you know, which one appealed to me most. And since those storefronts don't exist anymore and it's just local shops, it's actually really hard to be able to get the books into those shops. Mm-hmm. So for instance, I don't think there's a way until I expand beyond Amazon that local shops will even be able to buy this book.
Interesting.
There's just not enough copies that exist. And so I would have to commit to purchasing a bulk print of this.
And they're just kind of selling them as like an independent.
And I would hold on to it, right? And in the hopes that I can get rid of this copy. But if I don't, then I have, you know, 1,000 books in my basement that what am I going to do with them? And they all cost money. So, yeah. And so it's a tough decision and it's a big decision and I haven't made it yet.
Yeah. And it's kind of an interesting question too, because a lot of it hinges on people's buying habits and people's travel like habits, right? So, I mean, in the days, at least when I was traveling a lot more than I do now, I would just go to the bookstore and pick up a guide. Easy. I just look through the guides and be like, oh, this one seems like most what I'm looking for. And I just pick it up and I go pay for it, right? But people like online shopping has just changed. That whole universe has changed. And so the consumer experience has changed. And so I don't actually know what people do these days. I mean, I'm just old school and dating myself, but I still order books when I need to go places, but I don't know what the youngsters do.
Yeah. You know? And part of the marketing strategy that I had to do long ago when I was doing the proposal was to identify who I thought this audience was.
Interesting.
Demographic studies. Demographics. It's the same with Facebook, right? Like you have to pick, I want 25 to 65 year olds and wherever, you know,
those 90-year-olds are not traveling. I don't know.
Right. And you sort of just narrow in order to be able to say, well, this is a, you know, there's like 60 million people that are in this demographic. And so hopefully that would work anyway. And I kind of felt that it could cater to, lots of people as I would hope that it would, but primarily the 30 plus crowd, not that they're millennials don't read, and not that they don't buy books, they do, but that the idea of travel planning via a guide, I think has just lost its sort of luster over the last decade. And so it's probably just not part of that strategy for travel planning right now. And I'm trying to make that more of a, change it, right? And get people back into the concept that holding a tactile book is fun. And it, you know, like it's fun to complete these exercises for what is going to be your vacation rather than doom scrolling on Reddit or your Facebook feed to try to get recommendations from people you've never met or, you know, that have none of the same interests as you. And my book specifically goes into, right, like there's a whole big section on themes and there's 15 primary themes. And I wanted the reader to dive into what they're actually interested in. And each elective, as I call them, there's 700 electives in the book, which is a lot, but some of them have only a sentence to them. And some of them are extremely dense, right?
Elaborate.
The three bucket list items, which are Jerusalem, Petra, and the Dead Sea, have the longest elective entries.
Sure, so makes
there's
sense.
More to know about those than any other places. So those are the longest entries. So of the electives that you can choose from, they're all included in three different places. I wanted to make sure that there was a lot of ability to cross-reference in this book. So they're all listed in terms of rank. You talked about rank earlier. I used an algorithm in order to create caters to millennials, right? Like everybody wants to know that this has been vetted by people other than me, right? And it has. I created a whole system that allows the experts in the field, plus my opinion, to combine in order to rank order what are the best things to do in the country. So all of the electives are listed under rank. They're also all listed under theme. So they cross-reference under theme, and then they also cross-reference under region. So if your focus is primarily just, I want to go to Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, then you can find those chapters in region if that's really what you want. But if your focus is you want to do long day hikes, or you want to go to the best restaurants, or you want to do a wine tour, or you are interested in street markets,
food.
Then food,
I'm gonna eat
right.
my way through, exactly. you know,
then you the go to land. The food and drink chapter, and then you read the subcategories, which are specific, you know, and you go through the different categories that you can choose from, which would be restaurants, street markets, right? And you pick what you specifically would be interested in, hopefully in places that you wouldn't have thought you would normally go to. And you mm-hmm. wouldn't have found on your own, because that's not how guidebooks normally work, but mm-hmm. because they're not organized by theme. So really the concept was, individuals should be able to build their own itineraries based on their own interests. And that's sort of the longevity of this project that I want to maintain. So this is the first version of this book, right? I want feedback. You don't give feedback to Lonely Planet usually, but I built this guidebook because I want to have a conversation with travelers about what do you find most useful? And this is what I find most useful, but if there is another version, I want it to be, I would like to know how you have used the book. And so I am looking for that feedback. I have a mechanism to do so through my website. But one of the main things that I thought was the most important was to incorporate themes, which are what people are interested in order to build their itineraries.
Cool. And, you know, if the Amazon reviews are any indication, it sounds like people are actually really excited about the book and have been enjoying using it. So, I mean, at least that's the feedback that I read when I ordered my copy.
Yeah. I'd love even more reviews. That's how you actually build readership in the ads. So your rank goes up the more reviews that you have. So for instance, if you Google Bucket Guide to the Holy Land, mine will come up. But if you Google Travel Guide Israel, which is what mine is, I won't even show up on
down in the
page because I don't have enough reviews yet. And you'll find many books that are out of print that have 150 reviews are actually listed above me, because that's just the way that the algorithm works.
And this is a small note for our listeners. This is a really great way to support small businesses, right? Like people that you know, shops that you know, give them a great review, you know, even this podcast, hint, hint. So, because that does make it easier for people to find it. And it also supports, you know, the places and the businesses that you love too. So I will definitely leave a review for you, Tim.
I appreciate that. Thank
you. Yeah. And my question for you is, what's next? Is there a bucket guide list to DC coming out soon? Or since you're in DC now, or like what's next, do you think, after what's next in the series? Are you taking a break? You're just doing the book tour for now? Because it's a lot, right? I mean, you've got the full-time job, you know, you've moved, and like you're, you know, there's a lot of other things going on. So what's sort of the next step? Is it just marketing the heck out of this one and then thinking about it? Or do you already have like a little nibblings in your mind saying, oh, I think I know where it's going next?
Yeah. So I definitely have ideas of how I want this to develop. I don't know. I have also a lot of ideas for other projects that have been on hold for years and years because I've been so focused on this one travel guide project. And I'm interested in a variety of nonfiction style of writing. So for instance, I love wine. I'm thinking of writing an introductory book on how to create wine tastings at your house. And so anyway, I have
lots of ideas.
Too many ideas to actually implement all of them sustainably. But I will say, in terms of the bucket guide, this book probably won't live past this year in this form. It's too big. I realize that now. It's glorious. I love
it's
the book.
Glorious. It really is.
I love the product. But in order to make a profit on it, I probably will need to break it up into smaller pieces. So says everybody that I have ever talked to. So I will probably have to focus actually on this particular book and make it something that could be profitable in the future so that I can write more bucket guides. So like a bucket guide to Israel or a bucket guide to Jordan type of thing.
Okay. So it gets recycling
some of the content.
Got it. So sliced up into individual countries maybe then.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Nice. And then after that, then, you know, I've lived in Mexico, I've lived in India. A lot of these places are more difficult. And I didn't want to do France, right? Like, there's a million guidebooks to France.
There are a million guidebooks, yes.
Right? So I wanted really to places that people would like to go that are difficult to plan on your own, because of language, because of just complicated, it's a completely different type of culture. But how do you do it on your own rather than having to join a tour bus? And those types of countries where they're sophisticated enough where you can buy bus tickets without it being a complete shambles, mm-hmm. Right? Like
that's kind of your target.
That's mm-hmm. kind of the target for what I would sort of focus on next.
Okay. Well, congratulations on
you
producing this lovely, beautiful volume to the world so that people can enjoy and have amazing adventures across multiple countries.
I
have
do.
Not been to the Holy Land, but if I do, I have something to take with me. Yeah. And I mean, I think I love your story. I think, you know, when you have a dream or you have a vision, I think there's so many excuses that we can make about, oh, I'll do that later, or I'm busy, or And the thing is, you don't need to do it all at once. You can slowly, bit by bit, over 8 years, get to the pinnacle or get to the summit. Just doing it a little bit in free, you know, time here and there on weekends and evenings, and taking trips—terrible, terrible trips, you know. But, I mean, and the things that you can accomplish, right? And I mean, and overseas, right? And like all of this coordination between, you know, a UK publisher and places to store the books, and you're in New Zealand, and then you're moving, and I mean, we do this all, right? All around the world. The world's a small place at the end of the day, and technology makes it even more so. So, but yeah, I mean, congratulations, Tim. I mean, this is something to be really proud of, and definitely check it out, you guys. It's a wonderful book. And I look forward to more of them. So no pressure, but yeah.
Well, thank you, Tanya. It was a pleasure being on the show. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to discuss the book. And I will keep you posted on any of the future books that may come out.
Awesome.
Thank you.
If you like this episode and want more, make sure to give us 5 stars on the podcast player of your choice. And after that, check out our Facebook page. From there, you can learn about our other episodes, connect with our guests, and of course, share your own ideas for success. We'll see you next time.